to in situ upgrade, we also need to acquire land so that we can build communities in an integrated manner. So this year we managed to acquire 3 pieces of land, one in Lephalale in anticipation of the big power station that will be built by Eskom. So many people will be going to that area. The other one, we bought a land in Polokwane, in the upper market of Polokwane, to encourage inclusionary housing. And the other one was in Palabora. So what we are saying is that if we have to be serious about spatial restructuring, you have to acquire land. Otherwise, we'll follow informal settlement.
Which no, I mean the program.
No, the program is not the problem.
So now on the second and the line, which one is Comoré?
No, that's fine. That I'm hoping to do so this week, so you'll be aware of it in time. But please remember, we're expecting annual reports. If you are not in your offices here in Cape Town, please make arrangements with Llewellyn to send the report by post or whatever to you. I don't know where the committee section will pay for courier services, but I do know they'll pay for post. So make sure that, and this, as you can see with the Transnet one, they're quite big. And it's going to take you a few weeks to read them and to really study them and so on. And already we need to start planning for the 26th when Transnet is going to be before us. So then the other general thing that I want to just say is that usually we see the people with the annual reports in the fourth term. Okay? We've now tried to bring it all up into the third term, which means that even with Transnet and so on, usually what happens is that they come in October. Because we've brought it up, we may have problems with people being here. And I'm still working on some of those things. Transnet, Maria Ramos has said that she's overseas and so on. And she's coming back, I think, the day before the Tuesday that we see them. Is that a Tuesday? Yeah. She's coming back on that day. So, you know, it's kind of touch and go as to you know, whether we get, for example, the full boards and so on. But we're at the very least, make sure that the CEOs are here and the chairperson of the board are here. Then you'll also note that because we're kind of trying to deal with the big ones, the big SOEs up front, then there's not too much of time for you to prepare between some of these SOEs. So it will be in your best interest. I've asked Llewellyn to make sure that we get the annual reports as soon as possible, distribute them to members as soon as possible, and for you to start reading and studying those things as soon as possible as well, so that when we actually get to our meetings, you'll find that we have a week and then we have another week and so on, and it's just going to be annual reports coming out of your ears. So you're going to have, you know, a great deal of reading and preparation. And of course, thereafter, we have a whole series of reports that we have to adopt and consider and so on, okay? So that's the program. Anybody wants to ask anything in terms of clarity? As I say, you'll get, hopefully, the final version of the program by the end of this week, okay? Then let me just point to this document, which is your Agista annual report, and they were supposed to be financial statements. I'm not sure, Llewellyn, if we've got separate financial statements, because this is just an annual report. Unless they mean the financials in here, but I don't see any financial statements in the report.
Yeah, normally form part of the normally in the report, but they might be separate.
I think we need to do that because they were referred to our committee as two separate items. What this is really something that's been referred to the committee by the speaker for consideration, but not for report. Now, what has also happened is that this particular report, and I think it's because it's kind of overarching and they're not quite sure which committee exactly must deal with this particular thing. They've now referred it to about 12 different committees for consideration. And only trade and industry is meant to report on. So what I think we will be trying to do is to be in touch with the trade and industry people to see when they receive their briefing, so that we can have a joint briefing on this particular report. Instead of wasting our time here, and then each of the 12 committees taking separate briefings and so on, I think it'd be a wise thing to just coordinate. And then at a later stage, what we'll do in our program is we will consider it separately from that trade and industry cluster, whatever. So what we'll do in the program is once we've arranged to have that briefing with trade and industry, we'll have a separate session in our committee for any comments and considerations. So, and of course, we can, nothing stops us from reporting on it if there are things that we feel we should be reporting on it. But as I said, it's not an obligation that we have at this stage. So that's as far as the ASGISA report is concerned. Please, I think it will be wise to just also look at it, because you won't have time to close it to our annual report. And so now that it's with us, to scan it so that you are prepared for that meeting. I understand from the committee secretary that trade and industry is taking a briefing on it on the 15th of September. So that may be an opportunity for us to sit jointly with them. But as far as our program is concerned, I think we've got something on the 16th, and we're considering an annual report on the 16th. So it may be, and because what we'll do is we'll try and have one of the smaller entities reporting to us on that day, so that we can just take the morning or whatever it is, and in the afternoon we can join trade and industry or vice versa, depending on when they're having their meeting. Okay? So that one is an outstanding issue, which we will then deal with later. What we have on our agenda today is your two reports. The one is the China report, which Mr. Wang has kindly done. I must say, Mr. Wang, I haven't looked at it apart from 10 minutes before this committee, and I haven't read the whole thing. So I'm going to ask you to just then take us through the report. We can then finalize it in that regard. And then we've got the SAA report, the session that we've had previously with the SAA, which is a continuation of the meeting that we had earlier, which was when they brought their annual report last year. So, Mr. Wang, I think we must start with your report, or do you want a few minutes, and do you want us to start with the SAA thing? Is it okay? That would be good. And it'd be nice, because I think apart from Mani, you were on this tour as well, eh?
Yeah.
So I think between the two of you, if, and I don't know anybody else was on it. None of us were on it. Eric was here. Oh, that's great. So we've got three people who were on this tour, and it'll be very nice, I think, to just get a sense before we start with the report of the visit and what struck you most. I mean, when I read the report, it seemed quite amazing.
The report hasn't changed much from the version that our previous committee secretary, Bonani, and research, Eric Ducati, has done. What I did was I moderated then and we changed a few papers which Llewellyn had helped me at the last minute last week to edit and change it. So the report has been tabled before, but I think it's warranted to go through the changes that that we've made. And I think Dr. Bande came to correct me wherever that material that's inserted. The report is presented in a way as a committee as a whole. There weren't any party particular perspective. Which I'm sure we can add in if the request. But basically what we said was our report towards the main section, you also see the Chinese that has line, has already said about that. A lot of what they mean by strategic industry, they mean city residents to take communication, to extend to the power grid. That also lent us some lessons on how we should handle the EDI, which means the rate distribution that we're planning to do. Chinese has separated power generation from the power grid, which power grid relies solely on by the state, and the power generation has been slowly privatized or in joint partnership with public. And the relationship between SOE Parliament and the board of the management has to become not a problematic one, but a challenging one in China as well, being that the current status is that all the SOE has at least one party secretary deployed, which means they have strong relationships between SOE management and the party direction. And of course, in China, the party leads the government, the government is led by the party. So that's one lesson perhaps we can consider as a lesson. In Vietnam, what Vietnam's doing now is exactly copying, or not copying, but borrowing lessons from China 20 years ago. And they've been doing very well in the past 5 years. But I think just as a note, outside of this report, Vietnam this year has the economy has gone disarray from other reasons. I don't think it's relevant. Well, not relevant. It's relevant to SOE, but it's not relevant to the report, because at the time when we did the report, when we did all of that business, it was actually the pick up the restructuring and the pick up the SOE performance and economy. So I think the recent disarray is partially attributed to the global slowdown from the state. But I think that's something else that we need to understand as a background of what happened afterwards. So, yes, I think that the core essence of the study, if you don't read anywhere else, I would suggest that public should read the conclusion, and particularly one of the greatest lessons we as a community had learned was, again, I stress that it's not about the privatization of these state resources, but it's about the management and the skill of SOE management, and also the restructuring that was always different than other countries where China and Vietnam came up from very different background than our own one. And also, they continuously, they did not have a party area where the skills and also challenges of geodemographic public where in China and Vietnam, obviously, all the people schooled and educated at the same level or with no racial discrimination or particular groups. So I think that's what's different in one of the major differences in our restructuring efforts that we should take note of, and that we obviously cannot simply compare two or three other countries just because one of the characteristics. Thank you.
Mr. Panda?
Yes, I'll
think
on the page 8. Point number 7.1 and 7.2. 7.1, I'd like to propose that we add there, you know, about the foreign investments that came in after the new dispensation rate. Although we said they moved away from the communist ideology, way of doing things, and they moved more to an open market, we also saw actually the old China city and the new China city, you know, it was, I think, in the one thing that we stood over, what was the name of that city?
The same one.
Yeah, and then you got the, but you can see there's different cities, and it's because of the the United States and Japan and some other countries to come in and start developing there. In 7.1, if you can just add maybe the sentence of, about more about the foreign investments to open more markets.
Shouldn't that be more appropriate under 7.3?
Well, and then 7.2, I think that's a very important paragraph. I think speaking to my colleagues on the other side, on
are
the
you just ignoring me, or
7.2,
Mr. Sandat?
Oh,
yeah? Are you just ignoring me?
No.
I'm asking you
whether
7.3 is not the more appropriate place to put in your point about.
We can do that as well, yeah. Because it is as well as the general essence. It's part of the general essence. It does not really necessarily.
But I mean, it's 7.1 is not. It's got nothing to do with the issue of privatization and the aspect of privatization. It's 7.3 that has it. That's what I'm saying to you. That maybe that is where you want to include.
The reason why I point that one we talked about there, the first to embark on economic reforms. It was actually part of the economic reforms. That's why I said the 7.1 was also to open the markets for the international world. But it doesn't matter as long as it is part of 0.7. Madam Chair, why
7.2?
On 7.2, I just wanted to, it's a very important paragraph for South Africa to take note about that. Once you move away from state-owned enterprise and you privatize more, then there will be more wealth for the people. With the other side, I haven't got a problem. I concur with all the other information.
What are your impressions about the trip? I mean, that's really what I wanted to, rather than going into the report, which we'll go paragraph by paragraph just now.
Well, what you experience there, Madam Chair, we must remember the SOEs is not the same like we know SOEs in South Africa. We've got here a couple of big SOEs, like Eskom, big one, Transnet. In the past, with the Communist Party, almost a cafe, or a very small little shop, there was no private ownership. Could have been seen as a sometimes they understood it that way when we talk to the people there. And that all becomes now private. So they say we reform hundreds or thousands of SOEs. So they thought, then we come to the conclusion. They refer to actually enterprises, big, small, medium, whatever the case is. So they are still, like the report said, major service deliveries, like electricity and that sort of thing. They still play a major role to make sure. Yeah, but even though they are been running by private sector, they control it in terms of prices and the availability of the far rural areas. So there's a type of intervention, but not prescription. They let the free market run the thing on the free market basis, but there are certain limits, not to form a cartel or whatever, so they can, increase the political electricity prices or whatever the case may be. But they don't interfere in such a way that the private sector, we need the country, it's not worthwhile producing it anymore. So they play a very economic, trustworthy role with the private sector for them to make a profit, but on the other hand, that service is not available. That's the way, actually, I told the Communist the Communist Party people when we spoke to them in Sunday, and they said, to bring in foreign investment and to bring in, to open it to the free market system, actually. They only kept the name Communist Party, but not the youth. Correct English for ideology? Ideology? Yeah. That's all gone now. Although it's one party and they control it, but they control it and they run a free market system. That's what we learned from them. But as I say, that their understanding from of an SOE and what we've got here is very different. So what we are doing is we say we must control the power in South Africa so that it's a public enterprise, not what I say, but what South Africa says. Because it's important service, the services must be rendered to all the people. The problem is, in China, you will never see a person, the work ethic is just different from other people, I think all over the world. Everyone works. You will not see a person that's not working. Everyone is busy with something for survival. They all work They work hours and hours. If they have to leave at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, and I spoke to some of these people, they don't start packing up 10 to 5. They do the rather 10 past 5. And they all make a huge contribution to make the economy work. And that's what we learn from them. You know, they work like, I made an observation there, they work like ants. And I remember that. I can't say that. That is actually how they are. They work. And they all contribute to this. Actually, the first time that new markets opened to them in the private, when the markets all over the world came into China and all that stuff in Vietnam. And they all benefit from that. And so it's only, like in South Africa now, a couple of major public enterprises that are still sort of run or controlled by the state. But on a basis where there's not interference of turning down the private entrepreneurship, rather enhancing. Like in South Africa, we ask for more private partnership in Eskom, and the state not to be the sole shareholder, not the, the only purchaser and supplier or distributor of energy. You know, they it is in the hands of the private sector that the state grabs a certain type of control on the availability and the price that they really want to afford. That is my view, and that's am I correct if I say this? What are you experiencing?
Yes, Eric, what are your impressions?
Well, thank you, sir. I think for South Africa it was a good case study because just before I go to the lesson, one thing that struck me with China was that the international spirit among the Chinese people was very good. I was looking in terms of the cities here in South Africa and then in China. One thing I realized that most of the people were running small businesses, just the family and stuff. And one thing also that I liked about China's economic development was that here in South Africa we are talking about affecting the second economy. But in China, the way they were addressing that issue, although they were not like using the same terms we were using, was that structurally, people who here in South Africa you might have found on the street there, and they were structurally brought in within the cities, because you find that people who here in South Africa would say they were informal economic entrepreneurs. In China, they were brought in, and then you find that the big buildings that whose number of these people were selling like shoes, anything, but you won't see stands on the street, there were no stands. And that struck me also as very important, because we always talk about how big is the Chinese population, but on the street, they were very clean. The street was clean, there were no stands, nothing like that. Everything was structurally brought in. Whereas in South Africa, when we're talking about the first and second economy, almost like we're talking in terms of transactions. Structurally, we are not bringing those people. You see a number of people still in the sense, but in China, I like it the way they did it. Coming on the FOD, another thing also that came as strong was that China had something like 350,000 FODs. While here in South Africa, we have maybe 80. But one thing that I didn't get clear was that because here we would distinguish between KG2B, KG2A, so in China, we didn't get how they do that. Also because we have a TSMA, in China, I don't know how financially they run the SOE, because there were a number of questions that we were asking trying to find out how these things are happening. But one thing that came as true of all was the party that the party was very strong. If you held a senior position in the party, you also had a senior position in the government. And the SOEs usually had somebody from the party who was overseeing the whole process. From a political perspective, another thing that also I think might have helped China to reform so quickly, they say it's within 20 years or more, I'm not sure. But I do, because China is one party state. And I don't think they have a strong civil society the way we have here in South Africa. Meaning, I ask that question because if a one party state and then the government adopts the policy and implements it, the interpretation from civil society will come out with different views. But in China, which is the advantage, because it was a one party state, so civil society couldn't come up with various criticism, which is not the problem, we should have done it like this. In their advantage, the fact that they have one party state and that they didn't have a strong civil society like we have here in South Africa. So, in the overall, that was the impression that I got about China. It was a good case by the people.
No, thanks all of you for those impressions. It certainly sounds like an absolutely fascinating, firstly, place to go and visit, but secondly, in terms of the extent of the reform. And I understand it started in 1978 and it's still not completed. So, you know, 2 decades long and still in the process, so to speak, which shows you the extent of the scale. I mean, the one thing that I was reading about earlier, I haven't read the whole thing, but the one thing that you were pointing to in the report was the extent of the number of job losses jobs had to be shed during this reform process to move towards privatization. I mean, at a scale that I don't think we can even conceive of in this country. 60% of the, 20 million, or how many people do they employ? Well, now they employ about 10 million employees, having shed 60% of the workforce. I can't even begin to fathom those numbers. I mean, their workforce is a quarter of the entire population of this country. And this is a scaled-down version. That's just 40% of what it used to be. It used to be 60% more. So, you know, when you start thinking about those numbers, it's just incredible. And obviously, you know, with unemployment, obviously being one of the major points of departure here. One is unable to deal with the fallout in the way that the Chinese dealt with it, which is also in the report, which is they established specialized interventions and made sure that every single one of the people who were retrenched were dealt with in a way that either got them more employment or certainly different employment, or were able to be retired. Now, that you can do if you're a one-party state, but it's a bit difficult when you have a free market economy basically underpinning your economy. So those kinds of things, I mean, clearly, just everything in terms of scale is just so big. It's so, I mean, having, 120,000 SOEs or something like that, which was reduced from something like 350,000 SOEs, which is just incredible. maybe what we can do is to just go through the report on a paragraph by paragraph basis, just to make sure that Chris, I'm going to let you take us through it. No, just in terms of construction and also the kinds of things that Mani was talking about earlier, to add some of those things and so on. Because look, the point of this report must be that those people who have not been on the study tour must understand. So I think we're best poised to do that. And you guys are best poised to tell us what you actually found.
I think 1.1 is, and one point to just background on how we engage with the Chinese first.
I think you're going to have to read. You've got to read the first paragraph and so on. I'm letting you do it because my voice is very bad.
I think the committee hosted a delegation first half of the Jiangsu province and parliament back in 2007. And the main discussion was on issues related to the process. We have then received invitations from the Secretary of Provincial Structure, who also sit on the CPC, that potential party list, and then they invited us to visit the Jiangsu province, considering the restructuring of the SOE in China. And then we, at some way, in the community feel that we should also visit the inhabitants there in close proximity. And they were also having going through SOE reform over the past 10 years.
So I think in that sentence you want to add the word south after the committee.
Visited China from August to 10th. And then
is that 2007, right?
It's 2007, yeah. We spent 2 days in Beijing, 3 days in the center of Jiangsu province. We visited Vietnam from 11th to 16th, which we spent a day in Ha Long Bay and 4 days in Hanoi, which is the capital. Among the major issues the committee was looking for is the following. Firstly, how today so in these countries, particularly in those in the energy, freight, transport and aviation sector function, and we're trying to match it up with our great SOE here. And what were the major aspects of the structure of SOEs in these countries over the past 10 years or so? What criteria were used in any participation, training, with what goals and who have been and then also what were the ends of these restructuring processes and what has been achieved so far. How do SOEs relate to the government on the one hand and parliament on the other? Now how did in parliament we appeal or not, that's right. And how does government supervise the SOEs and what structures does it have so far? What does it have for the system? And what is the general relationship government, parliament, board of SOEs in the management? And how do our parliamentary committees exercise oversight over SOEs in the energy, the same energy, freight, transport, aviation, and sectors? And the financing agreement of the SOEs and how much, if at all, they spend on the national services, how much on their own resources of revenue? And then how do the SOEs, particularly in those the need of budget. But today, for example, provide cheap electricity to the poor, and so how do they manage to balance the socioeconomic and commercial sectors? What was the extent of state and private sector involvement in ASO? Is there foreign private sector involvement in ASO in these two countries? If so, in what form? And these were the background of our study focus.
And I think what you must then do is to have a subheading after those questions to say firstly, I think 1.6 must go up there. So you say the delegation consisted of, so the subheading would be the delegation. The delegation, yeah. So 1.6 becomes 1.4, I think. And then 1.4 becomes 1.5. And then I think 1.5 should be like a conclusion, huh? At the end. So then your next heading will be the People's Republic of China.
Okay. Right then.
that China has been playing an increasingly important role in the course of globalization. The state economy is the leading force of the national economy, and its development of China's economy is clearly inseparable from the SOE. The delegation has met quite importantly their name.
What does that mean? What does that statement mean? Just explain to me, the state economy is the leading force of the national economy. What does that mean exactly?
What happened was, although the state retained the name, but what happened is a lot of problems for all the provinces, nearly all, I'll say 60-70% of the provinces had their own foreign and state department, in which they intervene and then they make their own foreign direct investment. As if they were a sovereign state and interact with a foreign country. So you'll find out that a lot of SOEs, you have national SOEs and provincial SOEs. Sometimes provincial SOEs might be bigger than the, or instead of bigger than the national one, because that particular problem might be much richer than any other problem.
Maybe we should say that in that paragraph as like an introduction to understand the system. Because I think that's important, what you just said. I mean, I wouldn't know that from the report, that you have provinces that really operate almost autonomously in the foreign sphere and attract foreign direct investment into their SOEs, and then you have national SOEs, and sometimes your provinces actually have bigger SOEs then. So maybe that's the kind of thing that you need to add in that paragraph. So... will you formulate it later, or must we do it now? Okay. So you know what to say there, right?
And the delegate has met with the state-owned administration, the SAC. Basically, what the SAC is similar to RDB, except that it obviously has much larger authority in terms of its report. I think, if I recall correctly, it reports directly to the State Council, which means it's got direct communication with the equivalent of the cabinet and the state president. And also we met with the Development and Research Commission, which act as an advisory role to SACSEC. And then we visited one of the SOEs, which is the Transportation Stock Holding Company.
So this year is an SOE.
Yeah, the
CSH. This is an SOE.
Yeah.
So this state-owned asset supervision and administration commission of the State Council, doesn't have any links to your parliament, to the parliament of China. That is, it's like an agency which is controlled by the executive that operates between the executive and the SOE, like a holding company kind of thing. DPE is now
more
or less, except that it's not a ministry, it's an agency proper. And it's headed by like a bureaucrat or a politician, or I suppose.
No, I think it's not headed by a politician. I think it's headed by what they call the an official.
Okay, so that's an agency. That's what you should say there, just by way of explaining what it is. You say the state, the delegation met with the following institutions, right? And you say the state-owned asset supervision administration commission of the State Council in Beijing, which is an agency operating between the executive and the SOE, which is an agency regulating agency operating between the executive and the SOE.
Okay, and 2.2.
No, hang on. And that would just be your national SOEs, not your provincial ones, right?
They got provincial. the way they sounded like they managed a whole lot.
Mm.
I mean, they were basically telling us they were 350 odd thousand a now they're cut down to 700 or something.
So it must be that, must be both. Okay, so we don't need to be absolutely specific on that one. But your Development and Research Commission, what is that? Where does that operate and how does that interrelate to this agency? What is that the one that sits and plans the economy for the next 20 years or 30 years or where it wants to go strategically?
They give advice to TechSec and that's how TechSec used to allocate resources to different agencies.
Yeah.
So it's like a planning.
Planning functionary of TechSec.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure whether they report under TechSec or
just say advising.
Oh, advising.
Yeah. And this agency called SASAC is obviously empowered to make investments.
Yeah.
So they don't like go to Parliament and get a budget and stuff like that. They obviously plan with this commission gives them information and then they say, okay, let's say we need to prop up our steel industry because in the next 20 years we're going to build a lot of bridges, whatever, and so the steel industry needs investment, and so we need to put in resources there.
They still take the money from the people from this.
Okay.
They still have to
okay. So that's the link then between Parliament and the SOEs, is just to give them money.
Basically, the people from this will give them this. Directions and they have to do the planning and the actual monitoring, I think that's more of their main goal.
So when you met with your parliamentary committees, did you get to discuss that? So they would say okay to a budget and they would oversee. Would they oversee SACTEC or would they oversee the SOEs? I imagine SACTEC.
If I recall correctly, the people's conference, they don't interact with the SOEs.
Yeah. Okay. And then I see you've got this nice thing about SASAC, which is obviously very interesting how it links with this model that DPE was proposing earlier on, right? In the sense that you have this agency between the executive and the SOE, and they have a strategic planning. In fact, during the apartheid era, I mean, a lot of the planning for state-owned enterprises happened at a level close to the executive, but that there was forward planning, and then they drew in whatever resources they needed from universities and so on, and they planned around these things, which is something we just don't have. I mean, we don't have a central planning capacity anymore. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so now if you see 2.2, that gives you a slightly more detail on what SACTEC is. Basically, it reports directly to the State Council, which is the highest decision body in China. Now, it informs the responsibility of shareholders on behalf of the state, supervises the preservation of any increasing in the value of state-owned assets of state owners under administration. It also supervises and manages the assets of SOE under the supervision of the central government, being one of the states. Its main function includes the following, basically, a dispatching of channels to large on behalf of the state and taking charge of daily management of the panels. And they, that's one of the rules I mentioned of deploying public secretaries, similar to state. Also appointing and removing top executives by the enterprises, meaning the board, the
of Congress?
Very in performance through legal procedures, and when they mean by legal procedures, go through the Supreme Congress, they'll recommend or granting awards or inflicting punishment to the finance budget committee, and basically the committee will agree or say no to the rewards.
That's very interesting. So they have a finance committee, but they won't have like a public enterprises committee in their
party. In fact, the public enterprise members are subordinate or part of the finance budget committee.
Mm.
In fact, in People's Congress, they have much fewer, they work in clusters. And I think that's what we're also trying to do. People end up saying that there are too many committees, one FO is reporting to three committees.
Mm.
In fact, in China, they have finance committee, which is comprised of trade industry, finance, joint budget, other enterprises.
And they call all of that a finance.
A finance budget.
That makes sense. And then these supervisory panels, manage to get some sense of who they would consist of? Would they, for example, consist of people who are skilled in certain things, or would they be accountants? Who would comprise these supervisory panels?
The last thing was the panel definitely comes with at least one party secretary.
A party secretary?
Either from that region or from that province or from...
What's a party secretary? Just give me a sense of what that means.
An official from the party. Deployed there from the party in that area. So say for example, Transnet might have a party secretary in Transnet that could be the SACP party secretary or SACP deputy general secretary in province or at national level. I think the party secretary there as a paid position, but they sort of act as a liaising or monitoring role because it's one party state, so the party deploy one of its members as monitoring role in terms of liaising between the party's strategic direction and making sure that SOEs are following the direction on a daily basis.
Mm. No, because you remember that one of the things that we were mooting was the possibility of members of parliament sitting on these boards.
Very much similar.
So in a sense, I mean, you won't, in our context, be able to do it because we are multi-party democracy, to say, a party representative must go to sit on ESCOM's board. But what you could do is to say a member of parliament attached to this portfolio committee meeting, which is, and then, each member attaches to a different SOE. So in like vein, it's comparable in that sense. The fact that there needs to be some kind of political strategy involved is the principle.
That
would be one of the fundamental kind of primary differences as well. Okay. of the SOEs, hey? Daily management of the SOEs, not of the panel.
Yeah, of SOE, yeah. On behalf of the state.
Yeah.
And then it also has allowed to draft laws or any relevant regulation on the management of the SOE and establishing the relative related rules. Obviously, if this law has to go through the People's Congress, but all the regulations and the rules are applied throughout the SOE without going to Parliament.
Wait a minute.
That one again. Basically, what it means is you can imagine sector as a DP where the minister is allowed to bring a legislative proposal, like shareholders' management vote. Obviously, will go to Parliament. They equivalent into People's Congress. But when a minister makes regulations, say for our transport or freight sector, it applies with the immediate sector. It doesn't have to go to Parliament.
Yeah, so that's like subordinate legislation.
Yeah.
So basically, what you're saying is they're imbued with the authority to make regulations.
They can make relations between the legislative framework allowed to. 2.4, SASAC currently performs investor responsibility in running international central SOEs, and by central it actually means that national SOEs. So I don't know if we should use their terminology or adaptive to our terminology, because they don't use national, they use central.
So just put it in brackets, national, so that people reading it know what it means.
Okay.
When you say aerospace industry, that would be things like satellites and stuff.
Satellites, the shuttle to the space shuttles, and I think the aerospace more referring to
like
outside.
Yeah, but your defense is basically kind of defense link, I would imagine.
They didn't want to link it under defense because they this is not from the study group, but that's what I learned from the museum.
Okay.
And in general that basically the state in the Cold War, the state has a lot of pressure through the United Nations to not have China going into aerospace tactical weapons. So they link aerospace more for civil use. Obviously the technology can be transferred to defense, but at the moment they rather put it aside as a civil industry rather than commercial.
Yeah, I imagine there's a big market for commercial satellites, for example.
2.5, SASAC has a list of bureaus which are coordinated to address and oversee particular challenges in employees. These include the Bureau of Policy, Laws and Regulations, Bureau of Enterprise Reform, or the Bureau of Supervisory Panel, Bureau of Publicity, Research Office, and the Discipline Inspection Committee. sure the DP will have similar units in the department. Maybe not named the same, you know.
Should we add the word substructure in brackets before bureaus? Because, you know, when you say a bureau or something, you always think of an independent body.
Yeah, you think of that body, yeah.
Okay.
One thing, the DRC, the Development Research Council, is a policy consulting institution funded in the 80s.
Shouldn't that be a subheading? Because up to now, you've been dealing with SAS, okay?
Yes.
So the first one I think you need is a subheading. That says SASEC under 2.2, I mean in front of 2.2, and then in front of 2.6 you'll say the, what's the Development and
Research
Council.
It's a ministry label think tank, Islamic Development in China. Level experts in research institutions. It exchanged ideas with the rest of the world in different countries and has established extensive contact with many foreign government institutions, academic and business communities, as well as international organizations. It has also conducted various forms of bilateral and multilateral international exchange and undertaken a number of major research projects. On exchange were aimed at growing international experiences in order to advance China's reform strategy. Basically, it's feeding all these inputs to China.
Now, it seems to me that this is exactly what we need. I mean, we don't have this kind of collaborative...
Yeah.
Firstly, it's politically led, which is absolutely important because it's policy-driven. So China would have to sit down and say, well, we want to become a major, let's say, shipbuilding country. And that's a political decision needed, you know, and of course you need all of the information that would allow you to come to that conclusion based on, you know, research globally, nationally, at your universities and whatever it is, so that you have that expertise brought in one place takes the decision. But the interesting thing for me, Chris, is this, that happens in the planning sector and then they leave it to bureaucrats to implement. But that can happen because your bureaucrats are part of the party, if you're with me. So there's no real differentiation between state and party, but that the planning is coordinated at a national political level is absolutely crucial, because that's what I keep on saying. You know, who sits currently and says, in 25 years' time, South Africa must be the power generator of Africa? I mean, who sits and makes that decision, and on what basis? And you know, where is that thing located? And then how do you translate that into gearing the economy towards that for the next 10 to 15 years to lay the foundation for it? There's no that kind of coordinated approach. And clearly this is what they've managed to do quite successfully. But it helps that you're a one-party state to be able to plan in that way. And you have these fragments in the way that we have with your national concurrent powers, then your provincial exclusive powers, then each local government doing its own thing. That becomes a bit of a challenge.
Now, come to the overview of the reforms, basically to give you background on what they've done so far. Before 1980s, the economy was up to the state sector. Now, the state played a dominant role in the economy back then. The government undertook some reforms in the 80s. Foreign capital was encouraged to come into the country. The government made efforts to encourage the growth of the private sector. Proportion of the state's involvement began to decrease, but SOE still played a vital role in the economy. Now, the reform process unfolded through different stages. First, starting from the 80s through to the 90s. The first phase was more about the balancing of the relationship between
SOEs in government. Significant reforms were tax and remuneration policy. The target was to develop SOEs so that they could run similar amount of dominance. Because in the past, if you fail, second stage focused on internal reform and improvement.
But basically, that first stage was to get SOEs to be performing better in terms of market economies and so on.
She also understands their own particular role in the economy.
Correct, yeah.
And the second stage, the internal reform, the reputation and credit rating of enterprise was actually quite bad, was not high, and the quality of the efforts was very poor. Employment figures in SOEs were reduced by 60%. A huge number of loss making and non-strategic small enterprises were privatized. Efficiencies in enterprises were greatly improved. Now, I think with this particular section, one must take note that a lot of small enterprises were privatized in a bad way. Obviously, we didn't learn that in the talk because obviously the officials are not going to tell us how bad it went. But I know for a fact that a lot of small enterprise was the owner or the management made the company look so bad and sell the company as lower than its earning market value to their family or to their friends or to people they know. And so that privatizing tranche. And then within a month, company went back on with the standing because the company had a healthy attitude. It's just the management that once it was transferred, it was privatized, the company making money, so people say, you know, that's a good part. The company actually is making business as well, which I think.
So you're saying it's basically a self-fulfilling prophecy because what you would do is you would say, well, under state hands, it doesn't perform too well, and then people who are in management position can then have a particular interest in ensuring that it performs badly while it's not in their personal hands. But once it does get transferred, you know, it then reaches its full potential.
You find some of these points that the management hasn't changed. They can all something wrong.
Yeah. But I mean, it's also what it also points to. I mean, in there's this view coming from certain sectors, seems to me, that the reason why state-owned enterprises perform badly is because people who work in those enterprises don't have too much of an incentive to perform well because, it belongs to somebody else. But if you think about it, that's what happens in the private sector too, isn't it? I mean, you work for a wage. And yet there seems to be a difference in terms of motivation and so on. It's really just a mindset thing. So if in principle it's bad to have the state own it, I can't see the difference in principle of saying, well, then it does better in private hands automatically. I mean, it just doesn't follow to me that. It comes down from what you're saying is how do you oversee your state-owned enterprises in a way that makes people do what they're supposed to do? And that's really ultimately the best scenario, even in private enterprises, isn't it? That the level of oversight on the part of management has to be really clued up.
After that, the first stage of the establishment of the center in order to meet the requirement of the market economy through a central planning system. The government took great measures to make SOEs just in the market of the economy. So they basically targeted the management of state assets in order to ensure that SOEs serve the economy more efficient way.
Yeah.
And the reform process has not yet been completed. Still facing with some problems. In some economy has, SOEs has, like the men say, SOEs laid the foundation for economic development. Okay, the system of power development, which was the public sector, as the men say, there's still a number of SOEs that are encouraged or that are engaged in critical sectors like energy and communications. The ordinary manufacturing industry was open to foreign investment in the country. Various sectors of the economy were open since the 80s, and the government still exploring the question of which other sectors be open. The policy for SOEs that they can go as far as they can, but will be eliminated, or be eliminated if it comes about itself. The government decides the type and proportion of foreign direct investment that is allowed in the country. The current policy is that foreign, that FDI is not allowed in the military or defense. So you should play a dominant role in enterprises that deal with internal or and national security. Many of the SOE were under pro forma, were sold to the private sector, merged or reformed to make them more efficient. In some, the government became a shareholder, either holding majority or minority shareholder. Employees were also offered afforded the opportunity to buy shares in their companies at a discount. So it's important to note that in some instances, shares are only offered taking into consideration the position and individual holding in the company. The government used some of the profits from the SOEs to bridge the gap between the rich and the poor by redistributing some of the wealth. The enterprises that remained in state hands were largely those that were strategic to their national interests, such as defense among other sectors. The reforms would have not been successful without the private sector's involvement. Some of the benefits of the private sector involvement, particularly in the energy sector, are the extraction of new technology from overseas or locally from the research. They are of expertise and skilled technology. SOEs and private companies compete under the same rules, under the same markets. The SOEs are encouraged to be internationally competitive since only the strongest survive in the market economy. They are also encouraged to invest growth. Some adjustments were made to the structure of the private sector. Most companies are now listed in stock exchanges in America, UK, and Hong Kong. They manage it like their financial counterparts. Efficiencies and profitability improved speedily as a result of the transformation process. The main reason for the improvement was the determination to reform. Now, I think one thing members can take note is the listing of stock exchange in Hong Kong. Hong Kong was returned to China in 1997. But ever since then, they have sort of acted as a free trade, not free trade, but you know, a very liberal sector, particularly to attract, to make it a financial hub in the East, to attract foreign investment, especially foreign currency. So already Hong Kong has been deemed, and the national policies make it that it's not a regulated economy. So. Now it's the financial hub in the East. And I think they were, the finance committee were talking about making Telica being the financial hub in the Southern Africa. And I've read papers, on that previous, and I just haven't seen our government making any intervention on that point. So 3.7, in the past, SOE was scattered in many sectors, and many of them were making huge losses. At some point, China had about 750,000 SOEs, which has now been reduced to about 120,000. While the number of SOEs has decreased by 10% every year, profit has increased by 14% every year, if you just look at the figures. Now, many SOEs were closed down, and the internal management of the remaining ones was enhanced or improved. There was lack of independent management, and management did not have the right to decide what is the The result was lack of enthusiasm and efficiency. It was not easy to hold a person accountable for their activities or abilities. And more emphasis now placed on good corporate governance. And so you now have board of directors, which are directly deployed or appointed by
Directors are appointed by
section is we'll be looking at the solution to our investigation into accountability in and funding of the employees. Now, SAC is part of government. It's important to say something. The special authority that performs the role of a shareholder on behalf of the government is accountable to the government and makes reports to NPC, NPC, the National People's Congress.
Can we just add that in words to that?
Maybe you've made all the changes that I've
asked. We've asked them to do it. Step it up for us.
Okay, now if I only just added that, this one that was not added. The NBC stands for National People's Congress. So so the text that discusses critical issues with the Economic Planning Commission. In South Africa, the issue of role of parliament in relation to the AFOE has come to in China, SAC is supervised by the NPC, which is the legislature of the country. SAC is part of the government and mainly makes reports to the NPC. Now, the national laws or the national legislation in relation to GSOEs are made by the NPC, the parliament, and SAC has to work according to these laws. But they obviously, as you said earlier, SAC can make regulations under the legislation framework. Now, in terms of oversight of SOEs, they were not clarity as to the role of parliament. One of the reasons could be that China is a one-party state and the distinction between the state and the party is blurred. Most of the structures made during the stories are party political structures headed by senior party officials. These are the party sectors that I mentioned earlier. SASAC plays a similar role played by the entire council. Ministers and senior members seem to be accountable to the party. Let us talk about parliament or what it does to oversee their role. So the people's conference do not directly oversee or these employees, and our employees do not report to us at this stage. For point three, before the reform process, state SOE were not responsible for the profit and losses. Managed by state and funding came directly from the government. SOE gradually became independent players in now mainly rely on their own capital and generation. Instead of being continually subsidized, they are restructured to become inefficient, and SASAC receives dividends from SOEs, which is used for further restructuring all the free investment, which is as free investment in the SOEs. The effect of the reform process or one of the challenges facing South Africa is job losses as a result of restructuring. The government is fully committed to halving the figures of employment, yet it will change huge numbers of employees when restructuring. Some of the problems facing SOEs in China were attributed to overstaff. One big problem was how to improve the efficiency without compromising workers. SOE were required to improve efficiencies and cut excessive staff. I'm being delayed because some of the changes I made here was not changed here.
Just read it out and it will change it.
Now one big problem was how to improve efficiency without compromising workers. SOEs were required to improve efficiency and cut excessive staff. This process started in the mid-90s and also had some challenges. SOEs cut their employment figures by around 40 million workers were changed between 99 said that wanted to say that the project was well managed, as people were able to get employment elsewhere. Some workers were also able to buy shares when the equity was sold to the private sector. Those who were struggled as a result of being unemployed were given state support to meet the basic living standards expected by each Chinese citizen. Today, China's employment rate is between 3.5%. Although I would say the employment rate between the definition was that it might be slightly different the way they define how what is unemployed.
What is unemployed? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but then we don't know in details. Yeah. You can go further into that. The next one, so you also find what is interesting is that the fact that the government took measures to deal with retrenched staff and provided insurance and subsidies. Also provided training to retrench people in order to prepare them for future jobs, maybe in the same or other industries. China had re-employment agencies which with information about all the retrenched workers. They set up a database. The government is consistently creating new jobs, and most of the retrenched workers are able to find other jobs, new jobs are created. The private sector is also playing its part in job creation. There were also challenges in the retirement policy. Elderly people who could not get other jobs were allowed to retire early. The reform process was part of the overall economic reform program, focusing on the need to develop what is defined as a socialist market economy. Economies of scale, the state identifies market opportunities, area of investment, and infrastructure development projects through public-private partnerships. South Africa has in the past recent part seen massive power blackouts across the country as the country continues to develop. The electricity grid is owned by the national government, but the electricity generation plants are the owners joint ventures or sole private partnerships. Even rural areas have access to electricity. There's no free electricity to the poor, but the poor people pay about a month later. There's a regulatory framework that ensures that the price of electricity does not go too high. And from the observation point of view, the Chinese political system is characterized by a strong political party that is more influential than the state. People who hold senior positions in a party also hold senior positions in government. The party, rather than the government Democrats, determine the government policy. It's difficult to see a situation where government deviates from policies adopted by the party.
You know, it's very interesting that you're talking about the electricity prices. You recall in my speech in the budget hearing where I compared the Chinese Daesang to our Eskom. And in fact, if those are the prices that we're talking about to the poor in China, it's higher than the electricity prices that we have currently.
Free
and there's no free basic. Yeah. I mean, they pay on average 15% more for residential use than we do currently. Might be interesting, you know, to get that graph and put it as an annex. Might be very interesting.
Okay, the country has experienced problem in relation with its transportation system. The rail system is not adequately maintained and has at times failed to bring in the required daily revenue. The rail system is at times unreliable and the locomotive is not necessarily up to standard. As a result, people move the cargo by trucks as opposed to rail, and this has caused extensive damage to roads. The Jiangsu provincial government has a transportation stock holding company that is tasked with making investment in the transportation industry. It finances expressways, which is the highways there, the airline, and the building of bridges in rail networks. It also has shares in ports and automobile industry. Its main mandate was to serve and support economic development and not to maximize profits. Some of the proceeds from the toll fees are used to support infrastructure development in rural areas, since most people do not want to invest. Now you can see the transportation stock holding company, it's like a all publish enough content that study can everywhere, whatever it has to do with transport.
Now, it's very interesting that you say that that one is an SOE, which is in state hands, because there you see the difference between your private investment companies, your SOEs that make a profit, which can then do well in private hands, or that will at least attract foreign investment, and an SOE that focuses not on profit making but on developing infrastructure. I mean, if we had an SOE like that, you'd see the headline saying, well, so-and-so is not making a profit, you know? And yet that's not necessarily the most strategic of things to do on this business. I'm not referring to but you know what I'm saying? I'm saying it's a mindset thing as well. I mean, the only time we think of an enterprise as successful is when it makes profit, not the strategic input that it makes into the economy.
No,
I think I'll move to China.
And so, see, in the past, some of the SOEs have also made major losses over the past. I see over the past, can you repeat it? Over the past, and they are growing calls that they should be privatized. In China, it's difficult to compare SOEs and the private companies in terms of profit. China does not foresee the possibility of total privatization of industries, since the profitability of a company does not depend on the owner. The nature of the company does not change simply because it's owned by government.
I think you must underline that statement, eh?
Yeah.
Seriously. I mean, the more I look at it, the more it's such a fallacy that's so often repeated.
And you see, the nature of the company does not change simply because it's owned by the government. And efficiency depends on mainly two factors. The environment in which the company operates and whether they have modern corporate systems in place. A company should be able to respond quickly to market conditions.
Mm.
So that's a wrap for our visit to China.
Okay.
Now, if you look at Vietnam, application met with the Economic Committee of the National Assembly, the Business Renovation and Development Strategy Committee, the State Corporation Investment Capital, the Institute of Central Economic Management, Ministry of Transportation and Electricity Corporation. You'll see later that we're also going to SCIC act as a government representative in AOEs, which will be similar to SDPM, also act as a strategic investor and advisor to the government, but does not have control over the AOEs. So unlike the TASAC counterpart in China, which has got direct control of the enterprises, SCIC is much like our DP, which has no control over our employees. Its goal is to ensure stability, efficiency, and to maximize the value of the state capital or assets in employees. It reports directly to the Prime Minister, which at the moment owns about 700 employees. So, and if you look at the economic reforms in Vietnam, was started in 1986 during the 6th Communist Party Congress. These reforms contained elements of the market economy and were referred to as equitization. The equitization was the most problematic, but has also allowed enterprises to mobilize capital, acquire new technology, and improve competitiveness in the market. Vietnam has managed to equitize 64% of its SOEs, and the government share remains very high, even those equitized companies. The leadership of the equitized companies remain largely the same. The electricity industry is still in the process of equitizing, and the transport and aviation sector has been targeted for equitization. I think before I go further, this word of equitization has puzzled the whole committee throughout Vietnam. I mean, Eric can correct me, but my understanding of equitization is not about privatization, but more about listing or shareholding.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the past, there was no shareholding structure. So with equitization, you average, actually have an official framework of, say, 20% owned by government or 40% owned by who is that?
It's basically an instrument that is used to still maintain control over your SOE on the state's part, but to raise capital in the open market, so to speak, by selling shares. That's what it is.
So that you
can now upgrade your equipment if it's dilapidated stuff and so on. But that the state still maintains control over.
Meanwhile, it's owned by the private sector.
In the sense that it's like a company. You have a holding company. Let's say Old Mutual. Right? The Old Mutual will say, okay, we need to raise capital, let's say, to the tune of $20 billion. We don't have enough. We don't think it's wise for us to go and loan the money because the interest that we have to pay is far too onerous on our balance sheet. So what do? We have the other mechanism, which is instead of raising bonds, you raise shares. So you release shares into the open market and you sell shares to the general public to the tune of about $20 billion, and you then bring in that money as capital. But what you've done is you've diluted your ownership. So instead of now having 100% of shares, you might now have 51%.
On this one, I don't know, members of the committee are buying their policy. Now Vodacom shares are on. It was expertly by.
You're talking about members of parliament. We couldn't afford any of that. On your salaries, you cannot afford to buy it.
So you can borrow money from somebody.
Okay, anybody volunteering to lend members of parliament some money?
Vietnam, the government has overall control on SOEs as provided in the measure. The National Assembly decides on important issues relating to foreign policies and activities of SOEs. There are specific regulations on which sectors will remain under state control, including the sector around national security and power network. Now, when we refer to foreign policies, it's not obviously it's not to do with foreign space, but it has to do when SOE interact with foreign companies. I think one example would be, say, in our case, in our context, Infratel has embarked on a major contract with foreign submarine cable company without approval of the committee or management center, which I think is wrong. And that's exactly what's happening, what they're preventing today, when they embark with a major contract with foreign companies or foreign that have to interfere with the foreign policy of the country, the National Assembly should be noted. And 6.5, the process of equitization encourage private ownership, particularly in industries like commerce and agriculture. Vietnam achieved around 8% annual GDP growth from 1990 to 1997 and continued with 7% from 2000 to 2005, making it the world's second fastest growing economy. And just as a side note, that you know they won the worst performing economy this year because of food crisis and among other things. And it continued in the same period, foreign investment grew threefold. Manufacturing, information technology, and high tech industries form a large and fast growing part of the national economy. There were a lot of export of computers from Vietnam out, particularly making reference to manufacturing and IT. 6.6, Vietnam has been reforming its SOE as part of its overall economic reform program. The Vietnamese defined its system as a socialist-oriented market economy. Before the reforms, Vietnam had about 12,000 state-owned enterprises, and the number has since been reduced to about 1,900. About 64% of formerly state-owned enterprises are in private hands now. Government owns the majority shares in some of the enterprises that are still in state hands. It holds 100% shares in those that are deemed strategic to national interests. Equitization has been accelerated after Prime Minister's approval of the master plan. We're organizing and informing our ministries, agencies, provinces, and Type 91 Corporation in coordinate with the central resolution and their 9 central resolution.
I know, we know exactly what you're referring to.
The Type 91 Corporation is I think it was very similar to the different schedule A and schedule B devices.
It's just a bit of a categorization.
Yeah, it's a categorization. I have no idea what the central is. This is a very nice one. The year 206 exhibited. I think just to the party resolution, I think that's all we need to say.
Type 91. Corporations or stuff. Okay.
So the year 206 has exhibited progress in equitable corporations and large independent employees and large subsidiary companies. Now, there are incentives aimed at speeding up the process, especially for those entities that are still in the first phase of equitization. Now, workers are retrenched as a result of equitization process with even packages, and those who were interested in being shareholders will be in preferential prices and offers to buy shares in privatized companies. One important nature or feature of the equitization process is that foreign investors cannot hold more than 6% of the shares in the new equitized company. The locals are expected to benefit more under Farage. Now, one big question was that what should be done should the entity become restructured but still making a loss? Should the government continue to support it financially, then apply the bankruptcy law? Should the entity run out with a profit for a long time? The enterprise could also be put on lease for some time. And the future of loss-making enterprises largely depends on the reasons why it cannot make profit. But in general, the equitization process has first created new forms of SOEs, some of which are characterized by multiple ownerships. They introduced new management methods that have helped enterprises to adapt to new and changing conditions of the global economy, of the market. And it also led to major restructuring of enterprises and increasing competitiveness of companies. It also attracted an increased investment in various employees. It also increased efficiency and effectiveness there by leading the creation of more job opportunities. Also, acquisition of shares in the equitized enterprises by workers. The role of workers are also changed as they become shareholders of the company. I think that's a wrap of Vietnam. Vietnam was relatively short today compared to China. Now, if you look at the general essence of both visits, the common feature of both countries is that they both ruled by communist parties. Secondly, they're both one-party states when there is no official opposition in the legislature. Both Vietnam and China have state-run newspapers, Vietnam News and China Daily, respectively. China was the first to impart economic reforms in 1978, while Vietnam followed suit in 1986, 10 years later. The role of parliament is not specifically provided for in legislation, even though parliament receives reports and has the right to ask top management of the enterprises is appointed by government and is usually composed by senior members of the party. Both China and Vietnam have central authorities or bodies that are responsible for running a huge number of enterprises in different sectors. Both reforms in China and Vietnam were underpinned by a collectivization. And most notably in agriculture and factories and being manufacturing sectors. People worked in groups and also corporations. The economy was rigidly state-planned, with all the attendant variables of a centrally planned communist economy system. Now, millions of Chinese and Vietnamese were in the state programs. Before the reform processes, China could only manage to provide people very little bread and no sleep. that's the why, the reason why it was quoted was because the exact word that I think the secretary, party secretary said. The following the reform policy can now provide them with stake as well. In other words, the open market policy has generated much more to cater for the needs of the people. China's privatization process is planned and led by the state and continues to be under state control. It is a market that responds to state plans and not the other way around. The state determines the country's infrastructure needs, areas of investment, economy of scale, and what and how much must be in private hands. A huge number of employees are still under state control of China. May I just say, I think that's a huge task to manage. Now, 7.4, both China and Vietnam has indicated their commitment in dealing with unemployed workers as a result of privatization projects. From an technical point of view, it would seem that the reforms in both countries have little impact on employment than in the case of South Africa. I don't know to what extent that's an internal how you look at it,
Maurice. Yeah, I don't know that the report supports that.
The official report.
I think what you're talking about is something else, in the sense that the fallout they can deal with more effectively than we can. But in terms of the actual unemployment, as you say, their definition of unemployment may be very different from ours as well.
anyway, so on my point, we would that section. Let's continue. This is possible because the economic response closed and opened up for the new ventures and new job opportunities. The restructuring process in South Africa had a huge impact on the employment rate because prior to 1994, the country was already in a capitalistic market. Investors drew much of the profits on cheap labor. With the advent of democracy, the market expanded in industries which demanded skilled labor. The country could not respond due to the shortage of skilled labor force. China and Vietnam did not have racial policies in education. They managed to cope their citizens well, such that they could respond to reforms and global economic forces. Now, looking at the pace with which both China and Vietnam managed to successfully implement the reform plan, one cannot help but admire their success. Now, one major contributing factor to the success is the political process followed in both countries. Both of one-party states in Vietnam, for instance, over 60% of the success of reform process could be attributed to the fact that the country is a one-party state. Understandably, in both countries, there is no opposition, no vibrant civil society, and the government runs its own newspapers. Now, this gives the government an advantage in that it can clearly communicate its policies to the public without being contradicted by open up civil society. Without oversimplifying it, when policy is decided upon and communicated to the public, people respond in unified fashion and also carry on with what the government expects them to do. This does not mean that that each and every citizen of China or Vietnam agree with what the government does, obviously. But it does give the government an advantage in terms of working out the policies and the actions. And then the reform process were not without challenges, however. In some instances, the management of enterprises were opposed to the processes as they wanted to retain power. The ministries also wanted to retain influence over the activities of enterprises. Also, some people lacked strong commitment to the process, just to name a few. So, in conclusion, SOEs can be successful, properly reformed or restructured. China has opened up some small and light sector private and foreign with private and foreign businesses. It is trying to break the monopoly of some of the SOEs. For instance, there was no competition in electricity in industry. Power generation increased about 15% right following the reform. Although the global forces is pulling all countries to a unipolar one of the principles of globalization is the liberalization of the economy, of the opening up of domestic markets to foreign investors. The role of state-owned enterprises in this instance is very crucial in determining the direction of the country's economic system. Both Vietnam and China have demonstrated that the process of globalization does not necessarily undermine the country's sovereignty, especially on the economic front. It would seem that China has defied all the basic requirements necessary for any country's development in the one-party state with no strong or vibrant civil society and the coming continuity state plan, despite all these, despite all these foreign investors are flocking to China, on the contrary to the strong belief that one-party state may have the potential to scale up foreign investors. And from 1978 to date, China's reform have had positive returns. A country can choose to reform its own standing or approaches and still achieve positive returns. China has what is called socialist market with Chinese characteristics, and the system is working well for the country. Perhaps the greatest lesson to be learned from these examples is that the economic reforms or privatization are often successful in a context where the labor skills among the population is high. Now, as the country restructures its economy and people lose jobs, skilled personnel are able to employment elsewhere or from other NGOs. Some even turn to successful entrepreneurs. And one of the reasons why restructuring in South Africa is always a contentious issue is that there is already a high employment rate and also a shortage of skilled force, which is different from China.
And I think that conclusion that you got earlier on will be moved down here.
Okay.
I think that's good enough at this stage. We'll make the necessary changes. I'll give Llewellyn my thing here. And we'll bring the final for adoption at start our next meeting, right? Mama Maruti, how are you? Now, I guess you were on a plane somewhere. Let's then deal with this SAA thing. Where's the presentation of the SAA? Remember I said that the other part we're going to give me the presentation. Okay. All right. Let's just go through that one. That first part there is actually supposed to be a heading, so we need to change that. Now it will be reports of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises on a special meeting with representatives from SAA on the 4th of June 2008. The intro, following certain outstanding matters pertaining to the ongoing restructuring process at SAA, representatives of SAA pledged to revert to the Portfolio Committee during hearing from the annual report in 2007. Accordingly, this report should be read together with the report of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises on the occasion of the presentation of the annual report of SAA, and put a dash between SAA and 2007. Let me just grab a... very complaints received from the disabled community regarding boarding procedures for some disabled passengers, the committee was question marked by SAA in ending these concerns too. Now I think this report is not that public. There is the one that I've handwritten, because this one has lots of spelling mistakes and question marks that I don't recall having on the other one. Was there one of these SAA ones that I gave you this morning with my handwritten notes? I wonder if you're ill enough. Don't you want to just phone him and tell him to bring the handwritten one? Because this is definitely not the one that I've seen. Okay, let's just go through it as best we can. Due to complaints received from the disabled community regarding boarding procedures for some disabled passengers, comma, the committee was briefed by SAA to these concerns too, to leave the word ending. Now in paragraph 2, due to complaints received from the disabled community regarding boarding procedures for some disabled passengers, the committee was briefed, where the question marks are, briefed by SAA in regard to, and delete the word ending, these concerns to. SAA was represented by Ms. Vera Creel, Head of Department Strategy, Mr. Chris Smith, General Manager of, and Mr. Babalaji Galunga, General Manager, Human Resources. Presentation on corporate strategy and business planning, Ms. V. Creel. Career background to the restructuring process. Ms. Creel stated that by January 2007, SAA experienced significant losses and was forecasting further losses going forward. You got it. even read this.
Jay, you take it from page 2. Mm. At the bottom, the circles, it talks of.
Oh,
it's a bit. It's quite dark. I look up and try and print the first page. So they'll be much bigger. Can I print on the page?
Yeah, that's the place now. Let's just leave this now. By way of background to the restructuring process, Mr. Real stated that by January 2007, SAA experienced significant losses and was forecasting further losses going forward. SAA accordingly needed to overhaul. Take out the word overall, needed to, and the word to. So it will be needed to implement a strategy of simplifying right side to summarize as. So the way that sentence will read, SA accordingly needed to implement a focused strategy summarized as, and you take out the word of, and then in inverted commas, simplify, right size, reskill, etc. Okay? Everybody with me? Do you know which paragraph I'm in? Okay. So that last sentence, it says, SAA accordingly needed to, then you take out the word overall to. So it will read, needed to implement A, and then you add the word focused strategy, and then you take out the word of, and you say summarized as. Okay. The next paragraph, the restructuring plan was approved by the SAA board in May 2007 and publicly launched on the 4th of June 2007. It envisages the airline returning to profitability by March 2009. Ms. Creel gave a broad outline of the restructuring plan, which identified three categories of initiatives. Now that one, I wanted us to just double check with reference to the presentation, because the problem is I can't read this thing, it's very dark. So I'll go and have a look at the computer just to make sure what those things are, and of course to try and summarize each of those elements. Okay, because it doesn't read right. So that one will just need to get some work done on it, and then we'll come back with another draft. Then, Ms. Girl indicated that the restructuring plan was on track, but SAA faced massive challenges with soaring oil prices and exchange rate volatility. SAA's operational performance had improved significantly over the past year, but once off, restructuring costs would push the airline into the red for 2007-2008. SAA had embarked on a process to re-engineer the business to improve efficiencies and keep costs low. The process of unbundling SAA and establishing 7 standalone entities was underway. SAA had expanded the restructuring program from pure cost and revenue initiatives to a customer service improvement program. This was kicked off. Let's say this was started. Well, this began and then you take out the dash. This began in April 2008. So that's basically just a short synopsis of what was presented to us, okay, with the additions that I'm going to make when I look at the computer on the elements of that structural change plan, whatever. Then the labor stuff. Where?
On the last paragraph.
The process of unbundling SAA and establishing standalone entities was underway. It's not part of this thing here that I can't read.
Oh.
So the detail of it was, it's basically, I'll tell you now. Our country. But this was, you remember they were saying the unbundling was, for example, their food thingy. They're moving that to a separate entity. Their technical, SAA technical is going to be a separate entity and so on. But I can't read this thing properly, so it's difficult for me to say all of them. But we'll put it into the report. I don't know what. I mean, all whatever they were talking about. So I know the food thing stuck in my head. Mentioned it stated that the renegotiation of conditions of employment was identified as a crucial element in the sustainable turnaround of the country. The aim was and still is to standardize and simplify conditions of employment for all management, pilots, cabin crew, and ground staff. SAA had been in negotiations with all of the six recognized unions. Mr. Balunga, there is a committee and update on the wage negotiations with ground staff, cabin crew, and pilots. Challenges faced included the following: time constraints, stringent time frames, compromised processes, quality, crisis mode, short change throughout the process, by constant reality check, which in some cases compromised the implementation process. There was an imbalance between skills and loyalty. Most of your most loyal employees are not always your most skilled. SA technical wage negotiations were due in September 2008. The increase in staff turnover caused further instability. Here we see the summary of all exits per job category, where the majority of resignations occurred for the period 1 April 2007 to 31st March 2008. Of the 1,992 employees that left SAA, 963 were voluntary severance packages. And I think we need to add the rest of that summary there. In other words, what were the specific job categories and what were the losses there, right? And different categories and job losses. That should be in the presentation, doesn't it? And then SAA has signed a 3-year wage agreement. Providing long-term sustainability, management stability was achieved through implementation of retention policy. Presentation on operations, concerns relating to boarding of disabled passengers. Mr. Smart gave committee some background on the ground handling licenses tendered for all of its airports, which was awarded in July 2007 to two new handlers, Munich's Aviation and 38 Services. Neither was willing to or capable of handling SAA at the commencement of the license on the 1st of March 2008, and it was decided to award a third license in 2008. It was further agreed to let SAA make temporary arrangements till then. SAA entered into negotiations with the Tandler Equity Aviation to extend its license for 6 months, but by December 2007 had not been able to agree terms with them. SAA went into its alternative option and closed a 7-month agreement with Swissport SA takeover from the 1st of February 2008. Swissport was then contracted to supply passenger assistance units, PAUs, with the understanding that it would take up to 6 months to procure and commission. SA again attempted to negotiate an extension of Equity's contract, this time only for PAUs. Due to the late decision to switch to Swissport 2 months before handover, SA was, I don't know if you can say woefully in support, but was short of equipment on all fronts, including PAUs. Despite needing 9 PAUs across the country, Swissport had only 3, of which only 2 were in reasonable condition. Swissport immediately placed orders for 7 more PAUs for delivery ranging from early April to end of July. SAA negotiated with both Bird Air and Music for use of all of the equipment, excluding PAU. Both handlers were extremely helpful. SAA was able to secure C737 PAUs at the coast, which could not reach A319. SAA eventually sourced a correctly sized PAU for Durban and Boca Raton for the undersized PAU in Port Elizabeth. As I've mentioned, they were still unable to handle passengers with disabilities in accordance with acceptable norms. AXA called a crisis meeting of all handlers, airlines, and its two main disability community representative bodies on 11 March 2008. The immediate action agreed upon included the following: PAUs had to be equipped with towels and water. SAA would advise access for flights with passengers needing PAUs to ensure that these were allocated air bridges. That these aircraft were allocated air bridges. The three ground handlers were supported by the air menzies who cooperate and assist each other with PAUs. PAUs would be regularly inspected for Minimum equipment, put the chair, seatbelt, footrest. Footrest is a hyphenated word. Air conditioning and interiors. Old and dilapidated PAUs would be repaired and used, but only until the new units arrive from abroad. Transport staff, under the guidance and leadership of the disability sector, would be trained in various scopes and the correct handling of passengers with disabilities. Mr. Smith also listed the subsequent progress and future plans. Put two in words, okay? Two new PAUs were commissioned, more circuit chairs were ordered according to specifications received from FOSA. All PAUs were inspected daily and provisioned as agreed. All PAUs have been refurbished. The SA Disabled Alliance was asked to set up training in the sensitivities and treatment in appropriate, should we just say, in appropriate treatment of passengers with disabilities. The committee engaged at length with the submissions, during which concerns were raised regarding the seemingly never-ending restructuring process. I think there we need a subheading. engagement with SAA. The committee engaged at length with the submissions, during which concerns were raised regarding the seemingly never-ending restructuring process at SAA, at the word at SAA. Particularly those members who have been attached to the portfolio committee for many years, comma, felt that there were a string of initiatives that never seemed to bear fruit. Not where it were. Members were also concerned at the lack of appropriate levels of service at OR Tambo Airport, in particular where passengers standing in long queues often miss their flights due to the lack of management or apparent lack of interest by staff. A recent experience by the committee with a member of the staff of the SAA, member of staff at SAA, during a committee visit was alluded to with the suggestion that some staff seem to lack basic people skills. Issues were raised to which no immediate response would be forthcoming, and the committee requested that these be relayed in writing. Now, what we're going to do is, you'll see that there's another handout of the questions. It's on the SAA letter desk, which I don't have. This one here. So all of those questions were questions that were posed by the committee, and the responses are on the document by SAA, okay? So that entire thing there will be stuck into this report from this point. As I say, the following questions and responses were received, were posed and received by SAA, and then that whole thing will follow. And then what we'll do at the end is we'll just have a conclusion, which basically sets out a few issues, okay? So for example, you'll see there in the question and answer thing that baggage handling, for example, I mean, the claims have just increased exponentially over the last few years. So that's clearly a conclusion that we'll have to look at. In regards to things like your average service years and stuff like that, I mean, there's constant allegations. I want to say allegations because at this stage we don't have real kind of factual evidence. But allegations of retrenchments happening, and then, you know, there obviously is a shortage of personnel going forward. But these are conclusions that we'll then work on once we finalize the report. Okay, so the next draft will have all of these things plus the conclusions in, and then we'll go through. We won't go through the report, but we will go through the conclusion. Okay? So members must just read those responses and so on, and see if there's any particular conclusion that you want to add to the report when we next deal with it, which we will be doing when we next meet. Okay? Happy? Good. Okay, so that's basically it, I think. Unless anybody wants to ask any questions, comments, and so on. Okay, so the next time we meet, Llewellyn, will be on the trip. Any outstanding things logistically?
Sure.
Yeah?
No, I've spoken to all the members, and everything is, we're just waiting for the flight to come through.
Follow booking to the concern.
Yes, basically she's done everything. So I just need to get it and sign up on it.
Okay. So we don't have problems with black side.
No.
Okay. That's good. Okay, that concludes the meeting. What we will be doing is the ANC will just stay behind for a short study group. Mr. Kalola?
I see there's a report here.
That us in the study group. Okay, thank you very much. Let's have a 2-minute break. People can have coffee or whatever, and we can come back.
Yes, sir. I'm all right, ma'am.
You
make copies of that thing, ma'am. I know that the guys will be flying in on Sunday evening.
Look, I'll be driving, right?
You
will be on Monday morning.
You're driving up to the
yeah.
Because you're flying back.
No,
I'm driving back.
You're driving back. But we are in love. Yeah, no, I'll drive from my institute to Nassau. When I finish, I'll drive back to my office. Like on Togo.
You know, I could not find an electronic version of that report from anybody. What I did was, on Friday later, I one of my titles, actually take your shocking. The version, the hard copy you gave me.
I'm not happy to tell you.